Okay, so is everyone ready?
Ready.
Yeah.
All right, we don't actually have theme music. What we have is that Ron and I will play When the Saints Come Marching In on mouth horns, and you are free to join us if you so desire, but that is it, and then we will get into the heart of the episode. Is everyone ready?
Yeah. I cannot join in out of protest for last Sunday.
I understand. I understand that. All right, Ron. Mm-hmm. 3, 2, 1. Hey everyone, welcome to episode 18 after week 17 of the New Orleans Saints season. This is City Saint, Country Saint. I am Charles Starr, your City Saint. With me, as always, my friend L. Ron Mexico. Ron, how are you feeling?
Like I'm on the top of that roller coaster right now, you know? That's very familiar. I'm looking down and I'm like seeing like the managers of the roller coaster, and they're like trying to high five each other, and they're missing, and like one of them's like picking his nose with a screwdriver, and it just doesn't look good. Like, I know I'm on the roller coaster and this is supposed to be the good time, but I'm not. Like, the bolts are loose, right? You know, I can feel, I just want to make it to the end without it collapsing.
And I get that.
That's the vibes.
I get that entirely. Yeah. That is the cyclone experience. I don't know if you've ever ridden the cyclone, but the cyclone was built in, I think, 1917 or something like that.
That's the wooden roller coaster in Coney Island, right?
Yes.
All right, I rode that. I went on that. Yeah.
Yeah. And so the thing about it is, as they have improved the like structural parts of it, the outer parts of it, which are, you know, more like decorative is probably not the right word, but extraneous, the appendix of the roller coaster, let's say, they have let that rot to shit. And so as you are ascending on this roller coaster that is over a century old, making clickety-clack noises, it looks like you are on something built by the Unabomber.
Yeah.
Right? It is like the same wood from his shed is what you are on.
Yeah.
On the other hand, I am that child who is completely ignorant of what is on the other side of the crest of the hill. I have decided to be super confident about the last week, just to get through the week. I feel good about our game. I feel that bad things will happen to our enemies, right? Like, I am in the mindset of a sort of demented positivity that can only bring pain, and I'm aware that it can only bring pain, but that's where I am, is that I have committed to positivity for 2024. We don't have 8 wins and 8 losses in 2024.
Okay.
We are 0-0, and the world is our oyster. And so here, to join us on behalf of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, who are probably feeling more like free fall after that, but still in the catbird seat, because they absolutely control their own destiny. They just have to win against a 2-14 Carolina Panthers team, which is a sort of scary security. From Media Matters for America, Andrew Lawrence. How are you, Andrew?
I am doing well. How are you guys doing?
Good.
All good. You just heard. I'm flying high.
Yeah. No, I'm, you know, I was sitting there listening to y'all, and like, first I'm sitting here getting mad and like regretting my decision to come on this podcast. And then, you know what? Like, I remembered, you're right. We're in the driver's seat. You know, we got to beat the Panthers. And this is life as a Bucs fan. I mean, it is just up and down. So you know what? I'm doing okay. I'm doing better than I was yesterday at about, you know, 4:30.
Yeah.
Right. Right. Exactly. And so what is your connection to the Bucks? How did you become a Bucks fan?
Yeah, so, you know, if anybody that's listening follows me on Twitter, they probably know I'm quite a fan of Tampa sports. And I actually grew up in the Tampa area. I moved there. My family moved there when I was 2 years old. And my dad got season tickets for the Bucks. And I just never missed a home game from when I was 2 years old until I left for college at like 18. So, you know, it was a lot of bad seasons. There's that nostalgic connection there, you know, that sentimental connection there to the team for sure. You know, I lived through the creamsicle years. And then, all right, so I go to
uniform.
Yeah, I do.
You love them now. They were so bad, though.
I know.
So much criticism for those things.
No, they did. And actually, as crisp as they, like, I think the creamsicle uniforms look pretty good on modern television. Mm-hmm. But on the old CRT televisions where, like, the edges would get fuzzy, they really did look very funny.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not even the creamsicle uniforms I like. I like the old Buccaneer on the helmet with the night
teeth. Yeah, that's so good.
They're clean. They are. And just the white helmet with that bright orange. It's so unique, too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know? And I agree with you. And I think, you know, I think also the fit of uniforms now, you know, it's just a little more flattering to the, you know, mm-hmm. it's just these muscle dudes and that bright orange, like, it's kind of funny, but yeah, they look clean. I like them a lot. And so, like I said, I went to all of these games and suffered through all of these terrible years. And I went off to college in 98. And that is the year that, like, they first made the playoffs again for the first time in, like, 23 years, you know. So I had just missed all of that and had to suffer through all of that shit. And, yeah, so that's pretty much my connection with the Bucks is just how I came to be a Bucks fan is just it's a part of my life. And, like, I don't know. It doesn't seem like there's a lot of Bucks fans widely out there that are just born into it like that. So
yeah. Yeah, I mean, our first Bucks fan from the first game doesn't even care.
Yeah. Jeff, he couldn't even get our ass back that good. Yeah,
Jeff does. Yeah, Jeff.
Oh my God, I could have made so many jokes about the Bucks.
What was your favorite Bucks team? What was like your all time favorite season so far?
Oh God, I mean, it was definitely the era with Sack and Brooks and Allstott. You know, every once in a while on Twitter, somebody posts some Mike Allstott highlights that go viral, and like you just forget what a monster that guy was, you know. And also that era, so that's when we got the new stadium, right? Mm-hmm. We had a new core of players that were good. We got the new uniforms, and it was just for the first time ever, like the Bucks were a part of the conversation when it came to the NFL, which they had never been before, and it was just so exciting as a Bucks fan. To see that it was just great. That whole shift.
Yeah. Why can't I remember who the quarterback?
I think it was Trent Dilfer or something. Was it?
What when you won
the Super Bowl? No, Dilfer was on the Raiders.
Yeah, I knew it was one defensive team that had like a bullshit quarterback. Yeah. Wait, who was the quarterback?
Who was your quarterback?
So we had for the first little while of that stretch, we had Sean King running his quarterback, got us to the NFC Championship a couple of years. And we brought in Brad Johnson. And got us over the hump. Him with John Gruden. Tony Dungy, like, his offense couldn't score more than 17 points a game. Mm-hmm. And he refused to fire his offensive coordinator, who I believe was Clyde Christensen at the time. Just refused to do it. And that's why the owners decided to make the move. You know, Dungy's the one that turned us around. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't until they brought in Gruden and you know, we had to trade a couple of first-round picks to the Raiders for him and all of that. And that's what really got us over the hump. And, you know, we couldn't beat the Eagles. Like, I remember where I was the NFC Championship game. Like, when Rondé Barber hit a pick six with 2 minutes left and the Eagles driving to seal it. It's just the greatest. Yeah, it's such a good moment.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel pretty good about not remembering
Brad Johnson.
That would have
the very forgettable been, Brad Johnson.
Yeah, because I was sitting there, I'm like, Jeff Garcia, but like that was the Raiders or something. Mm-hmm. Like,
he coached he quarterbacked the Bucks afterwards, actually.
Yeah.
Oh, he did. Okay.
Yeah, yeah, he came over. So, but yeah, we had, you know, it was Keenan McCardle and Keyshawn Johnson. Yeah. Ken Dilger was our tight end. Like,
was Warrick Dunn the speed guy the contrast to All-Star?
He was, but he wasn't there for the Super Bowl. He signed with Atlanta as a free agent before the Super Bowl. But yeah, it was those two together. Oh, God, that was something special. It was so much fun.
Yeah, I don't know that I enjoyed it as much.
Right. Understandable.
I think the
y'all had a nice run there, too, yeah, though.
The year I think y'all won the Super Bowl, the Saints, I don't even know if we made the playoffs, but we did go 2-0 against the Bucs that year, I think.
I believe it because y'all just always have our number.
I don't know how happened,
like,
yeah.
Tom Brady never beat the Saints with the Bucs. He was except for in the playoffs. Yeah. Yep, that was it. Yeah. Drew Brees' last game, and that was the only time. Y'all just have our number, man. I was at the it was a Sunday night game in Tampa. I think it was last season when it was like a 9-0 game or whatever. It ended like 9-3, maybe something like that. Mm-hmm. Like, we can't score against you. You just have our number. I don't get it. It's so frustrating.
Well, but I know that's how it feels to you. But in the Super Bowl year, we lost to Tampa at the end when we ended the season on a 3-game losing streak. When we lost the 13-0 game to a quality Dallas team, I was like, that's what happens. And then we lost to Tampa, and I was like, what?
Yeah.
Wait. None of this is right. But then we straightened it out in the playoffs.
It makes no sense. The NFL makes no sense.
Yeah, you said this before the game. You went back this year and you got to see him play. You said the Jacksonville game, but was that in Tampa or did you go to Jacksonville for that?
No, that was in Tampa. And you know, we looked so good, like we demolished them, and I mean, essentially, I think it was like 38-6 or 38-7 was the final score. Essentially a shutout against like a really good Jacksonville offense. Our defense had looked so bad all year long, and it just a dominant performance. I came out of there feeling so good. Fourth win in a row. Now, you know, this week we're playing at home against a division rival for the division to clinch a playoff spot. Last home game. Like, no way we're losing this. You know, no way. And like, y'all just came out so much more desperate than us and, like, so much more prepared. And but, you know, I do go home. So I'm living in D.C. now, and I go home a couple of times a year. And if there's a Bucks home game, like, yeah, I'm absolutely going. I got my creamsicle throwback jersey, and I'm all decked out, you know, ready to go. So
Is it Testaverde?
Is it Zap?
No. Well, so I have a Steve Young Bucks jersey.
Oh, okay. Shit, yeah.
But I got our left tackle, Tristan Wirfs. I got a nice creamsicle Tristan Wirfs for myself when they came out.
Yeah.
All right.
Nice.
That'll do.
Yeah.
Ron, you were about to
say something. Oh, no, I forgot. I'm good. Yeah. I forgot what I was going to say. I was going to say something, but I forgot it. something silly.
All right. Well,
I've been rambling.
Working for like 12 hours straight. My brain, it got 4 working brain cells left. But yeah.
If one of them refires, just interrupt. So you said DC, and I mentioned before you're at Media Matters for America, which has a very meticulous comms department. We never would have expected that we would get vetted on this very stupid project, but we had to make sure that we were not going to venture into this portion has been redacted. what are you doing for MMFA?
So I run our night shift team, basically. And you know, for your listeners who aren't familiar with us, what Media Matters is we're a liberal media watchdog. So we essentially we watch conservative media and basically just point out the bullshit and the lies. You know, is what we do. And so I run our PM team, the night shift team, and we have 5 great people, and we monitor, essentially our focus is Fox News Primetime, which mm-hmm. right now is Laura Ingraham, Jesse Waters, Sean Hannity, and Greg Gutfeld. And, you know, my job is basically to just quarterback the entire operation, you know. We send.
I'm just trying to think of how to release you from the cage, despite what it'll do to Omella.
I'm glad you're on. I have a question. Like, so, like, you kind of get the vibe of what's happening in that sphere. So, my question is, what can I expect from my most racist uncles coming up this year? Like, are they going to be, what, they're going to be more scared than angry, more angry than scared? Like, what are they going to start? What kind of crazy shit are they going to be? Like, what am I going to hear at the next Thanksgiving? Like, are they getting more?
Oh, both. Okay. Like, it's always both. Okay. Because, like, that's what the business model is to make money in conservative media is you make people think that, like, if you don't watch my show or if you don't listen to my podcast, you might die.
Yeah.
You know, because I'm the only one that's telling you that, like, the COVID vaccine will kill you or you know, that 5G is going to give you cancer or whatever it is, you know? So it's going to be a mix of both. And, you know, it just depends on when you see them on what they'll be angry about. It might be critical race theory.
Yeah.
It might be trans people existing. You know, it might be that the green M&M is less fuckable. Like, it just depends on when you see them, and that's but I promise you they will be scared. I promise you that they will be angry.
Okay, so that's not stopping. Okay, because it's like talking to them.
I just want to say, as a feminist, that I did not find the green M&M any less fuckable.
You know, I did.
That's a very brave stance.
Thanks. I'm one of the good ones.
Right. Until they put it out there, I never thought of the green M&M like that. Even with the eye, I was like, whatever, it's a fucking M&M. And then when they started talking, I was like, well, let me look at the M&M that way. And they shouldn't have said that. Like, it's fucked up. I never wanted. I'm just saying I don't want to fuck the M&M, but I had to wonder about it for like a split second. Like, oh no, I don't. But like, I would have never even considered it.
So this is a good example of like what we do, because like that. The green M&M thing started with Tucker Carlson. He was the one that went off. And so we're sitting there and we're monitoring it. And the entire team is just dying laughing. This is so preposterous and so ridiculous. And, you know, so for something like that, like my job is to decide, like, do we actually do something with this? Do we clip it for the website to point out how ridiculous they are or sexist? I mean, we didn't do anything with it, obviously. But that's sort of what my job is. And it's very a ridiculous job, like, most of the time. You know,
it's now weird. I can't watch things ironically, right? Like when people talk about like a guy, like the easy example is like Dan Ninen's clean comedy, which, you know, a lot of comedians watch because it's so hackneyed and lame and poorly written and ancient, right? Everything about it is dated and bad. And they watch and they laugh at the self-promotional gumption to pretend that there's any quality there or whatever. And I've never made it past, like, 30 seconds, right? And the same is true of someone like Steven Crowder, right? I've tried to watch Steven Crowder's stand-up, and I just remember he went out at some college, and of course the house is like, it's, you know, it's like fishing in a stocked pond, because he's going to go to people who are going to see Steven Crowder, and he goes out on stage and he's like, who here loves the Troops? And I mean, you can hear bolts and seats creaking, right? Like, where, and I'm like, oh, that's already, I'm like, even for a person who I want to fall into a wheat thresher, I'm like feeling the flop sweat and can't keep watching, you know? And how do you endure hours of repetitive gibberish?
And you know, it is repetitive. You know, I'll say this, like I have a really great team, and like we there's a lot of gallows humor, you know? We have a lot of fun with it. We make fun of it a lot. And you kind of like just get used to it. But it's, you know, tonight on The Five, which is Fox News's highest rated show, the top story is, you know, the Princeton president resigning.
Harvard.
Yeah. And, you know, the next story is Green Day changed the lyric to criticize MAGA people. And it's just like all this shit that like doesn't matter. And for the most part, it's just mindless nonsense. But, you know, I'll say like the hardest days are when something like a mass shooting happens, you know, and you know, you got to come to work and you got to sit there and you got to watch these people say like the answer is more guns and like, you know, just make it say that the AR-15 is a safe weapon and actually everybody should own one, like, you know, 20 minutes after a mass shooting. It's insane. Fox News and conservative media is very influential. You know, I mean, I would say Fox News pretty much controls the Republican Party. And so I think it's important for people to know what's said in conservative media and like what they're pushing and that type of stuff. But nobody should watch it all the time. And right. so that's pretty, that's what Media Matters is basically. You know, I tell people all the time that like I watch Fox News. So
I mean, I figure your whole team doing it in like hockey shifts.
Yeah, basically, yeah.
Where you do a minute 45 and then you like get out. and you like take an acid bath. Right.
It's, I mean, it is like, it's mind-boggling, and it's gotten so much worse too. Like the shit that they say now, like, I don't know if you remember, but a few years ago, Tucker Carlson said that immigrants make America dirtier and poorer.
Yeah.
And there was like a huge outrage over that. I mean, people were calling, you know, huge boycotts, massive civil rights organizations speaking out, stuff like that. There's stuff said on Fox every day, 10 times worse than that. Yeah. And it doesn't break through anymore because they've been saying it so long. And, you know, that shit can be a little bit frustrating for sure.
And there's no feedback loop, like, to, like, thinking this crazy shit. Like, it doesn't, like, all these people can still go on with their, like, they don't face any repercussions until, like, you know, like, January 6th they get arrested or something like that, you know. But right. it's not right. All of them. They can watch that, have these crazy beliefs. They can go to the store, buy their goods, come home, watch, and just glue to the TV. There's nothing to interrupt that or challenge it. And that's, like, the frustrating thing I find with talking to old people, because it's like talking to the TV. Like, they have they have Fox News right. for a brain. There's no brain. It's just the TV inside there now. But they can still drive a car. They can still buy stuff at the store. Like, we don't have a mechanism to deprogram that. And that's, I think, like a, I don't know. Like, do you got any ideas how to stop that? Like, I guess you are doing that. You're trying to stop it. Are you making progress?
Yeah, but you know, yeah. You're right. Like, you know, we were talking earlier about how the business model is like fear and hatred, basically, yeah. Right? And I don't know. Those are like really primal things to sort of feed. Like, I think it's really addicting for people. Also, like I said, I mean, I think that people become convinced that if I don't watch these shows and listen to these people, like, I might die or my family might be in danger, because they're the only ones that are going to tell me that, like, Cory Booker is coming with an army of BLM activists to destroy the suburbs, you know? And, like, the reason why they're the only ones saying it is because it's not true, you know? And they're trying to trick me into listening. So, you know, I really don't know. There's not an answer, pretty much. I think for the most part, what we can do, and what I've actually seen some progress in, is keeping it confined sort of to that bubble and not letting it sort of break out more into the mainstream and to people that, let's say, lower information voters, people, you know, people that are too busy to pay attention to this shit all the time. Once it starts seeping into the zeitgeist of that, you know, that's where it becomes a real problem, I think. So, you know, keeping it confined in the bubble is a victory, if you ask me.
Absolutely.
I couldn't watch it. I ended up, like, and I don't think they're the same kind of poison, so I don't want to treat it as an equivalent, but I know a lot of people on the left have parents that were conservative who they, you know, have, like, significant disagreements with, and that was not really my situation. My dad was pretty apolitical. He had opinions, but they were, you know, pretty mild as these things go. And my mom was kind of very down the line liberal. I would not have wanted to have a conversation with her while Israel is bombing Gaza, but otherwise otherwise we, you know, could kind of talk. But she, when she was ill, you know, she started watching tons of MSNBC, and this was in the run-up to the Biden-Trump election, and it just made her mad all the time, right? It just wound her up in a similar way. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I felt the things that she was getting mad at were more legitimate more of the time, but a lot of time it was overheated. Yeah. Rhetoric about things that weren't particularly important, you know. I just was like, just watch the Food Network. Right. I was like, just don't do this to yourself. Like, yeah. I, you know, we can talk about what's going on, and I can, you know, tell you where this is bullshit and this is not, and, you know, watch oh God, what's his name? He just had his show canceled.
Medi Asano.
No, this is going to be so rude, and so I'm going to edit it out, and you're just going to tell me the right name. The other one who just had his name.
Eamon Moyadine?
No. Now we're playing homophones on 30 Rock. No, the other one, like Ali with a
Ali Velshi.
Ali Velshi.
He's great. I love Ali.
He is great. And like that was a show that I felt had a smarter edge to it. Less alarmist, yes. more discussion based. Chris Hayes, I think the same, mm-hmm. you know, but Hayes was on at a time where she wasn't watching it as much or whatever. Right. But like watching Ali Velshi was like, I'm like, that's a show where you're not going to, like, you'll get mad in the right way because someone is feeding you sort of authentic news that you can kind of react to. But mostly, just watch Triple D, you know?
Yeah.
Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives will not get your blood boiling, you know?
Well, you know, and I think that, like, you know, you're asking about solutions and how to change the people, how to deprogram people. I mean, I think it's more important to sort of deprogram the cable channels, yeah. you know? And I think one way to do it, and there's actually no way to do it, but is sort of removing the profit motive from news yeah. and from especially cable news, because the incentive to go after ratings incentivizes you to make people scared and mad and angry. And, you know, I think all cable news sucks. Like, there's not enough stuff going on for a 24/7 news cycle all the time. I mean, sometimes there is, I guess, but like they've got these hours to fill, and they want to keep eyeballs on the TV, and they do that by ginning up fear and hatred and stuff like that. And you know, I love it on Twitter when right wing trolls come back at me and they're like, "Well, what about MSNBC? What about CNN?" It's like, yeah, dude, they suck too. You know, like it really is mostly garbage, and you know, people should not be watching it all day, every day, for sure.
I don't think there's any solution to that makes sense within the United States constitutional order.
Exactly.
But you should be able to corner these people and beat them up.
Yeah.
Is what yeah. I feel.
I think we should go back, and anybody who pushed the knockout game story in like 2008, 2009 or whatever should just not be allowed on TV and not be allowed to like write in newspapers anymore. I think that would solve a lot of problems.
Yeah. And that's the good thing I think about like what you're doing. It's like you said, it's containable. It's inoculation, right? You're making sure you're the vaccine. You're the liberal vaccine. Like, you're making sure.
I just as someone, like, my wife did, you know, like media criticism and cultural criticism stuff for a long time. And I think it's just Sisyphean, right? Like, the people who I think I don't even mean this in a kind of mean or undermining way or anything, but I think the people who listen mostly to Media Matters are people who are predisposed to agree. I think everyone's media diet is like that, right? You don't watch the stuff that gets you mad for the wrong reasons. You watch the stuff that gets you mad for the right reasons, that convinces you that you were right to begin with, and you should keep hating the people you hate. I like to think that the media itself would pay more attention to what you do so that they don't fall into the same traps over and over again. But there's like no evidence that they do. Right. You know, like the conservatives just run the same playbook over and over of creating outrage bait and just repeating themselves with just more and more nonsense while you debunk it, while people on Twitter debunk it, while anyone who has a remotely critical ear for how this stuff happens just says this can't possibly be true. And they do it until it runs in the Times, because the Times can never fucking resist staying out of the conversation and finding some way to rationalize the fact that the conversation is going on at all. The fact that the conservatives are talking about it so much, even when it's clear how disingenuous the conversation is enough to warrant coverage. even if it's just Look at the Freaks coverage, because they run the Look at the Freaks coverage, and then Bret Stephens writes a column where he's like, they're not really such freaks, are they?
Yeah. Well, and the thing is, you know, I feel like I feel like a lot of the media looks at Fox News in particular, you know, sort of as an equal and almost like a partner, you know, but they're running the Republican Party. I mean, they are essentially politicians, and I feel like that's the way that they need to be looked at. I mean, when Fox News tells the Republican Party to focus on inflation and crime, like then all of a sudden that's what the Republican Party is running on in the midterms, you know? And
I disagree only to the sense that I think they're symbiotic. I think they are a feedback loop for each other, you know? Like, they didn't want necessarily to run the Trump stuff, but once it became clear that the Trump mindset was ascendant and the future of the party, then they were like, well, fair enough. If it's the choice between that and Biden, we know what side we're on.
Sure.
I don't think they're so much a puppet master as they are an essential partner.
I wouldn't say that they're necessarily a puppet master, but I think that, like, you know, what Fox News is doing is they're chasing ratings and they're chasing viewers, right?
Yeah, I think they're the propaganda arm.
Sure. Well, but see, I like in order to be a Republican politician right now, you need your face on Fox News and you need to be on conservative podcasts and shit like that. In order to do that, you have to toe the line of Fox News talking points and what they do and what they're saying. And this was a little bit more prominent with Tucker. You know, Tucker was a little bit more militant about this type of stuff. But that's, you know, if you can't get your face on Fox News to criticize trans, to say trans people shouldn't exist or whatever, and your primary opponent will do that, then, like, you're going to get primaried. You know, one thing I say a lot is, when Roger Ailes was around, I really felt like Fox News sort of existed to prop up the Republican Party. But now I feel like the Republican Party more exists to prop up Fox News.
It kind of reminds me of the way that, like, health insurance companies are not supposed to practice medicine, yet because of their influence over the system, they, in a sense, start practicing medicine, you know? And it's like Fox News isn't supposed to be being political, you know, taking political action, but because of their influence on the system, they, in effect, become the politicians in a way. Only because these two other organizations, like, you need healthcare because we live in human bodies, you need a political body because supposedly we're a country and all that. But those things have, like, atrophied those systems because these other outside groups that profit off of them have become even more powerful than the entities that have to exist. So they're, like, kind of predatory, but sort of symbiotic in a way that the profit motive funnels through both of them. But ultimately, yeah, I could see how, like, Fox News is so fucking powerful that, like, every Republican is gonna need their blessing, you know, to advance. The same way, like, you, if you're a doctor, you got to start giving. If the insurance company say this is what you can and can't do, you kind of take your marching orders there. Or the pharmaceutical company. I mean, maybe it's not a one-to-one thing, but it kind of reminds me of the same thing.
No, I think it's a good analogy, and I think you can see the sort of symbiosis there too, in that there is, like, once a treatment gets approved by insurance companies, there's less interrogation by doctors of the externalities of the expenses and stuff, whether it is the most practical way to do something, because they get sort of, not kickbacks exactly, but steered in a direction and all of that. I mean, the only reason I, you know, am pushing back a little on the stuff with Fox News is because there are always outlets willing to be crazier. Right, Newsmax and OANN, and they're not big like Fox, and so there's a insignificance to them because of scale, but you can see how they changed Fox. Mm-hmm. Fox could see that they were losing market share, and so Fox had to co-opt that audience by being crazier, by being more MAGA, by not being as willing to question the things that the party was deciding were in their electoral interest, you know? So you could see the pull in both directions of the party needing the outlet of Fox, but Fox having to make sure that they weren't getting out crazied on anything.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
There is so much dark money with right-wing stuff, too. I mean, that's got to be a harder one. Like, it's like, okay, so I didn't realize how bad it was. My buddy gave me, this is my first fancy TV. Like, it's not just a flat screen. It is a computer in it. Like, it has the TV inside of the,
Yeah, you got the little apps for Netflix on there, right? Yeah.
Through that.
Yeah, they're great. I just got one of those. Those are so cool. Yeah.
I can watch Newsmax, OAN, like all the crazy channels already on there. Like, I don't even have cable, right? It just goes through the internet. I'm like, how is the crazy channels on just by, and there's one left, it's like, I can watch the Young Turks, and that's the only sort of like centrist leftist one, and the rest of them is all like crazy shit. Like, I'm like, how much right-wing dark money exists that they can make me, they can let me watch this for free? There's not a counterbalance to that on that scale, like on the crazy scale for sure, and especially on the free scale.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's interesting, especially with like just what is the future of cable going to be like in general, I guess, and that'll sort of change things as well. But you know, I was going to say, like, I feel like one of the main differences between Fox News, why Fox News remains so successful versus OAN and Newsmax. Like, as simple as this is, I think it's production values. Mm. Like, I mm-hmm. think a lot of it has to do with it looks like a professional set. Mm-hmm. These are professional hosts. We know their names, you know, and we're familiar with it. I think there's a Pavlovian response, like, with a lot of Americans to just sort of put it on every single day at 4:30, 5 o'clock, whatever. And it's just on all day long in the background, or you're sitting there watching, whatever, but it's just on. Yeah, so I think Fox owes a lot of their success to that, to be honest.
Yeah, that is totally true, because, like, OAN feels like a TV channel in the RoboCop universe. You know, like, it feels like that.
Dystopian. Yes, it's so weird.
It's the production, it's too weird. It's like, oh, this is, but Fox News feels like it's sort of more in this universe. Boom, 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 boom.
Are you ready to talk about the game, Andrew? Are you steeled for this?
I am prepared, I think.
Okay.
I watch Fox News all day, every day. Like, I can handle this.
What can we possibly do to you? You're already a broken man. So what we usually start with, and I say usually because we're not smart enough to always remember to do it in order, is get his ass, where we now get to go after you as the vanquished foe, your leaking blood still warm at our feet. And so, Ron, do you want to take the first crack at his ass?
I'll take one. I mean, like, I never understood, like it's Florida, right? Look at the demographics. It's like the Bucks, right? Pirate themed, you know? Like, it's retirement communities. And I never understood, like, how you guys whiffed on Jimmy Buffett. Like, why is Jimmy Buffett a Saints fan? Like, he should be a Bucks fan, but now I get it. After that, I'm like, okay, if you guys, like, y'all had the deck stacked to win the Jimmy Buffett, his heart, right? And somehow, you blew it. And, like,
at least the Dolphins. Yeah, at least the Dolphins. Yeah. You're right. You're 100% right. It makes no sense at all.
It makes no sense. But, like,
we won the heart of Jimmy Buffett, man. And he... That really is a kill shot, which I didn't see coming.
No, me either.
I don't know how the team that I watched, for three quarters anyway, is remotely in the playoff race. You know? Like, nobody could put together a drive. Everything just kept falling apart. We kept giving you, like, first downs with penalties. And you still gave it away. Mike Evans had three catches.
Yeah.
I mean,
do you know who had the most targets for us on Sunday?
Was it Godwin? I don't know.
Was that Palmer guy?
There were two guys. No, it wasn't Palmer. It was two names that maybe you've never even heard of.
Yeah, one is I think, is it Chase Edmonds?
Yep, that was one.
The running
Chase
back?
Edmonds. And, well, I'm looking at it. I'm not a genius. But the other one is Cade Otton.
And Cade Otton, six
targets.
Tight
end.
And he had two catches for 10 yards.
Yeah, and so not good. But usually no, Kate Otten is the guy who I'm like screaming at the TV, how did you give up a fucking touchdown to Kate Otten? Right. So like that is what I consider his full Christian name.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, on a team with Mike Evans and Chris Godwin and Rashad White, and it's Kate Otten and Chase Edmonds leading the way with six targets each. It's so yeah. frustrating. And you know, you're saying like, yeah, that how in the world is this team leading, you know, from the division in the driver's seat? They lost 6 out of 7 games. Like,
yeah, no, I know. It's because we also stink. I know the actual reason.
Exactly. So what does that say about you? Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, no, I know exactly why. But I can't, you know, I'm looking at Kate Otten, and I got to say, if you want to know how to throw to a tight end, just look across the field to Juwan Johnson,
right.
who had 8 catches for 90 yards and a touchdown, right? There's a model there. Not that I want you to follow it. I want you to keep failing.
The unstoppable Juwan Johnson. I mean, what can you do, you know?
Yeah.
All this Fox News talk has broken my brain because now I'm like, I'm thinking there's maybe a conspiracy to this, right? That was, like, maybe I do a Tucker Carlson voice. That was too much of a beatdown. You know, it's like they didn't even look like they were trying. You know? The Saints are they?
No, but they didn't. Like they really didn't. And that's what was so fucking frustrating about it is, you know, this team had dominated Jacksonville the week before. They'd won 4 in a row. So much on the line. And look, y'all came out more physical. You were better prepared.
Yeah.
And, you know, you looked like you wanted it more. And that's what I think it was Todd Bowles, the Bucs coach, said after the game, was that y'all wanted it more. And, like, how is that possible? Like, it's just bad, man. And, it was so frustrating.
I got the angle. I think I figured it out. All right, so check this out. This kind of tracks. I'm putting on my tinfoil hat here. All right. They know if they lost to the Saints that it would pretty much solidify Dennis Allen's job for next year. Right, and that's a really if you're a Tampa fan, you want that, right? So because like no matter how good
we
are talent wise, with a bad coach, you can always outcoach up and win. So really, y'all playing the long game by sacrificing this, letting DA win. Plus, if we get in the playoffs, like you guys are gonna beat Carolina, so it's like really not that scary. You're playing the worst team, you just gotta beat Carolina.
I mean, I'm not taking anything for granted.
If I'm looking at the numbers, if I'm playing the long game, you get in. Even if we make even if the other teams lose and we make the playoffs like as the last seed, and you're not worried about us anyway, and you get Dennis Allen to kick around for another year or so, that's my tinfoil hat conspiracy on this.
Well,
I like it. One
of the things that Todd Bowles said is that they'd have lost to anyone on Sunday. He's like, if we play like this, we're gonna lose to anyone. And I want you to carry that energy for 1 more week. Because next week you are playing the epitome of anybody. And so I want you to go in with that tranquilized attitude, that defeatist sense, or maybe even just the overconfidence that you don't possibly believe you can lose. Because I believe in you. I believe you can lose that game.
I believe we can lose that game. There's no question in my mind that the team that I saw on Sunday can lose that game as well. Yeah. And, you know, it's been a weird, streaky season. The Bucs are healthy, you know? Like, they should have beat y'all. And anything can happen, man. Like, you know, like I said, we had 1-4 in a row, but momentum is just week to week in the NFL. And they might go in there feeling defeated, or they might go in there overconfident. And, you know, I can see it in my mind playing out that way. I am a Bucs fan. I have lived through this shit, you know.
What have been the, like, for real, because we've only seen them twice. And in the first game, it just felt like we didn't feel like we got slaughtered. But, like, what Jeb said at the time is, this looked like two bad teams playing each other.
Right.
And so when you guys started picking it up, where was it picking up? Like, what were the high points after we've abused you and get his ass? What were, like, the high points of the season? When you turned it around, what did it?
Well, you know, I think early in the season we could not run the ball at all. Rashad White was averaging, like, 2.2 yards per carry through the first 4 or 5 weeks. And they really turned that around and turned him into a weapon. So I think that was a big part of it. I think that, you know, our middle linebacker, Devin White, is a supreme talent. I mean, the guy is all pro if he trots. And he has been, the last 2 years, just unmotivated, been getting pushed around. I mean, look, this is a guy. His rookie year was our Super Bowl year with Tom Brady. And most people think that he was the best player on the field, especially on our team, for that run. I mean, the guy was all over the field, and since then just sort of disappeared, you know? And he got benched, he got replaced, he got hurt, and all of a sudden the defense started clicking. And, you know, we were 32nd in the league in pass defense. I think we may have moved up to 30, but, like, all of a sudden that started to get better, you know? And the pass rush started to come on a little bit. And all of that, I think, sort of culminated. And then there's just sort of the momentum, the good vibes. You know, you lose 6 out of 7, but the guy, I'll give it to Todd Bowles for this. Like, the locker room loves him. And you can tell that team is still fighting for him and still really playing for him. They didn't give up on the plan, you know? I mean, on the whole process. And you know, I watch a lot of Bucks interviews and read a lot about the team. And they were all confident that if they just stuck with it, they would turn it around. But even, you know, even in this 4-game winning streak, I mean, look, it started out with barely beating Carolina. And then we had a couple of good wins against Green Bay and Jacksonville. And the second win in that streak, I forget who it was against. But it was a sloppy win as well that we very easily could have lost. But then you look back at the streak where we lost 6 out of 7. You know, there's an overtime game in there, a couple last possessions. And I mean, I guess that's generally the NFL. Anyway, but the team continued to push, and the running game, I don't think you can emphasize enough how important it was to get that going. It was so bad early. And Baker, I mean, look, Baker is, as you know, to take away Sunday, but he's actually had a pretty decent season, you know, and I forget exactly what his numbers are, but his touchdown interception ratio is pretty good, and the team loves him. Like, the guys love him. And you know, I'm definitely hoping that they resign him, bring him back next year. I think he deserves it. I really think he's played a good season.
Yeah. Right. And me and Charles, like, our preview episode, we were kind of like running down the schedule when we got to Tampa, and we were both, when we said Baker's the quarterback, we were laughing. Like, but like after the first game, we weren't laughing. Like, when we played, we're not laughing anymore. He's probably better than Derek Carr, I think. Like, I wish we had him. Yeah.
Oh, I and like him.
And he ran a lot on us the first time, but didn't so much the second.
He hasn't. Yeah, later in the season, he really hasn't run the ball that much at all. I like that he's kind of an asshole, you know? And, like, he's sort of an asshole about – because he's competitive, you know? It's not like he's a jerk. It's just, like, he's an asshole because he's competitive. And I really like that, you know? And I think it resonates with the team a lot as well.
Yeah, he – I was hoping we broke his ribs on the 2-point conversion. I really was. I didn't even think the Matthew hit was late or dirty, to be honest. And I'm really critical of, like, players coming in late, even my own guys. And I didn't even think that was so bad, except for the fact that Mayfield was, like, crumpled over and was kind of limping around. But then after the review of Godwin running out of the back of the end zone, when it turned into offsetting penalties, he came back out, and I was like, oh, damn it. Like, you know, I thought maybe you were going to have to, like, run out Steve Young again for the Carolina game.
If Baker had been hurt, you all would have been very confident going into this.
Who is your backup?
Kyle Trask.
I've never heard of him.
Yeah. I'm just looking at blank stares. Yeah, you have no idea. No, he's he was a quarterback for the Florida Gators. We drafted him, I think, 3 years ago, and I think it was in the second round. And he had been projected as, like, a 5th or 6th round pick. Such a bizarre pick. So yeah, he's not great. Like, I've seen him a little bit. He hasn't played much at all. I think he's only played one snap this year. But even in the preseason, just it's not good. So
all right. So let's hope that.
Let's hope that guy plays next week.
let's hope he plays. And then I hope, you know, Baker heals up fine and sprains an ankle in training camp. So, like, nothing that affects his commercials or marital life. I wanted to catch up on a couple of things just from the Saints' perspective. So you got to endure that a little. We have a new guy. He played his second game for our team this week. But when I saw his name the first week, nothing really registered with me. But he is a guy who plays exclusively on special teams. We picked him up, I guess, from the 49ers practice squad. But his name is Shamar John Charles, which is incredible because Elrond's name is John. Like, we're not going to say more of his name. We're not going to get, but it is, he is the official New Orleans Saint of the City Saint Country Saint
podcast. We got to get jerseys.
You just get the Jean Charles jersey with a black and gold 38. And everyone's going to be like, who is that guy? And I'm going to be like, what, do you go to the bathroom during kickoff?
You know, it's strange, too, because down here there's a community called Isle de Jean Charles. And that's his name, too. And that is the first climate refugees in the United States, right? So, like, they've getting put on the you know, the Gulf has encroached too much on their land, and the state is actually having to pay for housing to move them, like, to the northern part of the parish. So there's also, like, a locality to, like, there's the same, that those two names together mean a lot down here.
There you go. That's how we became the 42nd most popular Saints podcast in the greater Louisiana region.
Yeah. Those little tidbits right there.
Yeah. So that's number one. Number two is every week we have to do a Trevor Penning update. Trevor Penning was our first round pick 2 years ago, and he is seen mostly on milk cartons. Do you want to take a stab at his playing time? Over under two offensive snaps.
It's gotta be over with the injuries we have on offensive line and all that. It's gotta be over.
Incorrect. So he played one snap on the offensive line on a regular play, even though Landon Young got hurt. The guy who came in off the bench to take all of the snaps for him was Cam Irving, who we pulled off of someone's practice squad like a month ago. Though he himself is also a first-round bust.
Oh, God.
He wasn't our first-round bust, but he was someone else's first-round bust. Though I think he's played well for us, and he's huge. Like, when we picked him up, I looked him up, and his numbers are like, oh, he's like a statue in front of a cave. He's like, he's gigantic.
Yeah.
And so he's played pretty well for us. And he also played 5 snaps on special teams, one of which was a field goal. You know, I actually saw Trevor Penning on the field as he got into position. And I was like, oh my God, Trevor Penning, or someone who bought his jersey. I don't know. The other funny thing is on the one play where he played an offensive snap, he checked in as eligible.
Oh, whoa.
He and Garcia were both eligible receivers on the play. Like, I don't even remember what the play was. I think it may have just been a jumbo package run for short yardage or something. And it would be very funny if he had as many receptions as offensive snaps.
That's like a Jimmy Graham. Jimmy Graham will do that. He just catches touchdowns, you know?
That's right. That is pretty much it. Oh, yeah, this is great. I'm going to read the one play where he checks in. It's 1st and 10 from the Tampa 24. Shotgun formation, Max Garcia and Trevor Penning reported in as eligible. Taysom Hill, left guard, 4-1.
Oh, God. You know how hard it is for Taysom to get negative yards?
The one play he comes in for is a Taysom Hill direct snap, and no, everyone gets through the line.
That's so, like, Taysom is so good in, like, getting you 1 yard at least.
Yeah, so that's no good. But at least Blake Groupie and Crocodile Punty both had good games. So our kicking stuff is okay.
Yeah.
So what has been the hugest disappointment for you?
I kind of want to say Chris Godwin. But I sort of put that more on the coaching. So, all right, I'll say the coaching to get the inability of the team to get Chris Godwin involved in the offense. Right. You know, I think before the season they moved him outside mm-hmm. a lot more than he'd had a lot of success inside of the slot. I think they had done that to sort of preserve his body. He's coming off the injury, a little bit injury prone actually, and it has not been working. And the week that he blew up, I think it was against Green Bay. He was playing slot again. Now they moved him back inside, and they were making an effort to get him the ball, and it opened up the offense a lot. And then they just stopped doing it again. So the failure of Chris Godwin to impact the game on a week-to-week basis is definitely disappointing.
I would find that disappointing. I mean, ours is just the offensive line is mostly cleaned up its act, but that's the part that gets me the most, and probably a close second is our defensive line, which has been good with, I mean, Atlanta was the game where we really shit the bed in the run defense.
Yeah.
And so we really have to hope that's cleaned up for next week. But hopefully they'll key on the run because no one's afraid of Heinicke. For real. Like, that's how we beat the Giants. You know, we just let Tommy DeVito go do his best and, like, spent the whole game trying to beat Saquon Barkley to death and let Tommy DeVito get away with whatever he could. And I feel like that's going to be our path next week, and just hope that our guys can get to the quarterback a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, this should have been a 2-sack game for Brissett because he got him once, and then the other time was the 3rd and 9. Like, this is the second week that this has happened on, like, a third and a very long amount. We made the play and then got flagged. Mm. And on this one, it was Brissett went straight up the middle and hit Mayfield. But he also got his hand around the top of his helmet. Like, it wasn't even a traditional face mask, but he kind of had his hand around the top of his helmet and they flagged him. And so instead of being like 4th and 12 from the 5-yard line, it gave you a first down. Well, it ended up not mattering because that was the drive that ended up with the Alante Taylor pick at the 2.
That was a great pick.
Yeah.
That's kind of what I'm really hoping for next week, is that our defensive line can stop Bijan and Algier from making it a total nightmare for everyone.
Yeah, our line played good. Brissett is playing really good these last couple games. I mean, we need that. We don't have any, like, Cam Jordan, maybe he's washed. You know, I hate to say that, but we need somebody else to, you know, and Granderson's playing pretty good, but not as good as, it doesn't seem like he's playing as good as he was at the beginning of the year. I don't know. We still look pretty good. The Tampa, that big guy for Tampa, Vita, what's his name? He's huge.
Vita Vea. Yeah. Vita Vea. Yeah. I love that.
So
dude.
Scary. That guy, he killed us the first time.
He's a stud.
Yeah.
Vita Vea is like one of the classic guys who just looks like a video game final boss.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's like 350 pounds and he's the fastest guy on the screen.
Yeah, he's terrifying.
He's sick. I love him. And he's a
monster.
He was a Tampa pick, right? He was like a top 10 first round guy, and he's played his whole career there.
Yeah, out of Washington, and there were a lot of Bucs fans that were upset that wanted the Bucs to take Derwin James, the safety with the Chargers now.
Florida State wouldn't have been a bad pick.
Like, no.
There was no losing in very that. True. Though I think Vea has been more consistent. I think I don't think has taken a down off. Since he stepped into the league.
I mean, he just shuts down. You can't run the ball at the middle of him.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's great.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, look, you know, each team has, like, some guys. We're just so old and so expensive, which is why I really don't want to blow a playoff opportunity when we still have one.
Yeah.
Because I feel like we're 2 years away from just having this team up on blocks in the driveway. And they're just going to be like, yeah, we sold those wheels. Sorry, man.
Yeah, we're 2 years away from, like, maybe being the Panthers this year, you know, like a complete...
Yeah, I think that's right. Yeah. I think that's right. But I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if they start doing a lot of dealing this offseason, you know.
You guys were so happy starting out this podcast. Stop thinking about the future. Yeah. Enjoy Sunday.
Last. Right.
But thank you. That is good.
Thank you.
I like it. We're revved up again.
You're right.
You have so much to be happy again.
You're right.
There's no such thing as the future. The water levels are rising.
Yeah.
You're
there's
right.
war everywhere. We don't have to worry about next season.
Yeah.
We're going to win the last Super Bowl.
The last. Well, that would be great. That'd be kind of great in a way.
All right. Any Andrew, any closing thoughts?
Oh, my God. I just, I really hope y'all are really disappointed and somebody gets your ass for me next week.
Good thought. Good thought, Ron.
We didn't ever talk. I just want to mention this. I always trash Derek Carr. This is probably the best I've seen him play.
Yep.
If he's listening.
He had a hell of a
right?
game.
Yeah. If he listens to our podcast.
Yeah, he was consistent. He threw no picks.
Yeah.
I don't remember any particular pass where I got mad.
Yeah.
It was just solid.
Yeah.
It was just really solid. And I guess my only closing thought is that we are recording this on Tuesday. In 3 days,
yes,
I am getting on a plane.
I will see you.
And heading down to New Orleans.
Hell yeah.
Where the City Saint Country Saint boys are gonna party for a weekend.
Who dat?
And who dat? And we're gonna watch the game. We are the men in the dome next week. And so that is something to look forward to. For me, I'm psyched for the week. I'm psyched for the trip. I'm jazzed again. Andrew, you got me back. You got me back into my positive framework. And so that's it. And so with that, we get to close the episode on a winning note with the happy horns.
All right.
Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Are you ready, Ron?
All right.
All right. You don't have to join us, Andrew.
I'm not happy.
You can't sign off. You have to listen.
I will absolutely listen.
All right. 3, 2, 1. Thank you to our guest, Andrew Lawrence from Media Matters for America. You can find him at Andrew Lawrence, where the there's a underscore in between the first and last name, and the A is the at.
Just look for the baby.
What? Just look for the baby in the avatar. And to my stalwart companion, L. Ron Mexico, I am Charles Starr. Thank you to Lunar Snow or Dan Partial, whoever gets to do the sound engineering this hectic week. Thanks, folks. See you next week.
Bye.
Who dat?
Who dat?